I'm flying airplanes over the world, but I'll be back soon to play more Bixaball. Bixaball, oh Bixaball. Bixaball, yeah, Bixaball. And doing kicking and throwing sports. Oh, yeah, oh, flying over the world and playing sports. Yeah.
Well, hello there.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So what we do is every week we make the other one watch a movie that we love.
But the other would never watch unless they were doing a podcast.
And then we talk about it.
All right. So we're going for a very lighthearted episode.
Yes.
In this one.
Last episode was really heavy for me in particular. I still can't think about it. It makes me sad. So you get to watch Airplane. As we said, it's kind of the grandmother of all the spoof genre. You like the Naked Gun.
Naked Gun to me is like the original spoof movie.
So you get to watch a movie about airplanes. What was your first airplane ride?
The first one I probably remember, I want to say like to Colorado, where my parents are from.
So you guys would drive there and fly there?
In general, in winter we would fly. In summer, we would drive.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but you're an international man of mystery because you were, what, 4 when you flew to Ireland?
I was 6.
Oh, sorry.
So my dad was working for a company here in San Diego, which had an Irish manufacturing plant they were bringing off the ground. And so my dad went over to oversee that.
Nice. And so you got to live in Ireland
for a summer, yeah.
Well, we're going back as soon as this stupid pandemic is over. It's the first place we're going.
Yeah. How about you? What is the first plane ride you remember?
I was in high school. I had an acting job, and they flew me to, I think we went to Santa Barbara. I had a gig.
Nice.
So they flew me out.
What was the acting job?
We would go into businesses and schools. We would train the staff on sexual harassment. So this was when sexual harassment, like Anita Hill, that was in the thick of that, and just kind of doing corporate trainings on what sexual harassment is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to play a student who would get sexually harassed or would sexually harass. So it was like a corporate retreat in a hotel ballroom.
That is outstanding.
Yeah. It was a fun job because give us food and put us up in hotels. And that was amazing when you're in 12th grade.
Oh, yeah. No, that's great.
Like, hey, we can do this for a living forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, Keith, what movie do I get to watch this week?
So my movie this week is a bit problematic, and I know that ahead of time. It's very sophomoric. It's Basketball, and it's got the same director and writer as Airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a bit dirtier than Airplane.
Yeah.
I know there's some stereotype jokes which did not age well in this too. So I'm interested to see. It's been a while since I've seen it. Probably like 20 years or whatever. So we will see if it aged well or did not age well.
Well, so. And as I said last time, I was disappointed in this movie. So I guess we shall see.
Yeah, I had a really low bar going in. So I don't know if that was it too.
Like when I saw Fast and the Furious and I was shocked that it had an actual storyline.
Like yeah. That. Yeah, I still don't understand why the Fast and the Furious movies, like anybody likes them.
Because it's cars and chasing and crashing and family.
Yeah, family.
I mean, you and I don't like
that. No, Fast and the Furious was the most video game-ish movie I've ever seen. And I was just like, evidently my vote doesn't count because we're on like the Fast 9
we're
or something like that.
We're almost on 10.
Yeah, so haven't jumped the shark.
Fast 10 your seatbelts. So I had said that this movie was kind of like the grandmother to the parody movies of the Zucker brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I was half right. Kentucky Fried Movie came out in 1977.
Yep.
And I had seen that movie, but I don't consider it really a movie because it was just a bunch of sketches. So that was actually their first kind of venture, but it wasn't a narrative where you had a beginning, middle, and end. So I was half right and half incorrect.
Plus, it was just a horrible movie. Even much more so than Airplane, every part of that movie I've seen is just like, wow, okay. Which is one of the reasons why I kind of stayed away from Airplane.
Because of that movie?
Yeah, so I haven't seen that movie all the way through, so maybe I'm wrong.
And that movie was a lot of like groundlings and Second City people, like doing sketches.
I don't know what it is about improv sketches, how they they sometimes lose something when you put them on film.
Well, because you had to be there. It's born on a stage in front of an audience. It's not being created in front of your eyes, mm-hmm. so it's not as effective on the screen.
Yeah.
It doesn't read as well. That's why a lot of, maybe Saturday Night Live characters, they get their own movies that are mm-hmm. not as successful.
Yeah, as in the strong.
Soul Man. Sorry, the ladies man.
Yeah, I was about to say, was it Soul Man? The one where the guy gets a deep tan.
C. Thomas Howell?
Yeah.
Does blackface?
Soul Man? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Soul Man. Yeah. To go to a black college? Yes.
Yeah, which, again, sounds like a really horrible premise. Now that we've backpedaled out of the stadium. What is a...
Stadium?
How do you think this movie went?
I don't know if it was because it was a Sunday afternoon and I was absolutely exhausted and we chose to watch it in our room. I still thought it was funny and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of slow in parts, and I was just kind of like, oh my God, let's pick up the pace, people. But this is kind of like something you can put on in the background because I've seen it so many times I don't have to watch it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like when I would have a hour-long commute, I would just put Beverly Hills 90210 on, and I'd put it in my cup holder because mm-hmm. I hadn't figured out how to plug it into my car's mm-hmm. audio system yet. Now I have a dongle, so I would put that on because I've seen that so many times that I don't have to watch it. Except when Brenda's having a fit because Kelly and Dylan had an affair, then you have to pick it up out of the cup holder and just kind of sneak a peek.
I don't know anything about
that. I'm having a new idea for a new show.
Oh, no. Okay.
So anyway.
So I'm going to get to watch Firefly with you. Is that what
okay,
you're saying?
Never mind. You always threaten that every
there
time.
There is like 7 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season. So there's always that too. So
okay. I apologize. And I backpedal out of the stadium. Is that what you said? Okay. What does that mean, backpedal out of the stadium? Is that a saying?
I've never. It's a saying I just made up.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm a dad now.
Do you have a pitch for this movie?
Of course I have a pitch.
All right.
So Airplane, uh-huh. a traumatized war pilot needs to pull himself together to save scared passengers and the love of his life in the slapstick comedy spoof Airplane.
No spoilers.
No spoilers at all. So yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about pacing at the end. There's some reasons why the pacing is different.
I'm going to let you just kind of take the lead because there's a lot of...
Oh, there's so many rabbit holes that we mm-hmm. could go through in this movie.
So I'm not going to derail you this time.
Okay.
Like I normally do.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So the movie starts with the theme for Jaws
mm-hmm.
and clouds. And then you start seeing the tail fins of one plane, then another plane. And there would be so many crashes if it was real life. I love movies that just right off the bat let you know, if you're watching this movie, we got 2 more hours of this. When I used to do Dinner Detective and was detective,
mm-hmm.
I'd always throw a joke right at the beginning to be like, this is what you're going to get. So
dad jokes city.
Dad jokes, here we come. So this is really going to be hopefully the most succinct plot summary we've ever done. There are so many gags and rabbit holes and side streets we could go down.
And, yeah, and things happening in the background of the things happening in the foreground.
I'm going to try to get through the plot
okay.
pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, we'll kind of talk about the bits we liked and didn't like. So I think that would be best. So we descend from the clouds down into a very busy airport.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people who's arriving is a very pretty and innocent flight attendant, Elena Dickinson, who's played by Julie Haggerty brilliantly. And later, a cab driver shows up who parks on the curb. A passenger gets in and the driver says he'll be right back. As the cab driver races in, we find out that he's Ted Stryker. He's played by Robert Hayes. And he's the boyfriend Elaine just dumped because he hasn't been able to pull himself together since he was a pilot in Vietnam. Elaine insists it's over and leaves for her flight with no other choice. Ted buys a one-way ticket to convince her on the flight. We also meet the flight crew. The plane's pilot is Peter Graves from Mission Impossible, playing Captain Clarence Over. And he has a co-pilot named Roger Murdoch, who is played by one of the greatest basketball players of all time, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it's important to note, from what I understand, he filmed this after winning one of his LA Laker championships.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like a young LeBron James being in a movie, or like a young Shaq. Hopefully this movie will be better than Kazam, but...
Mm-hmm. He rarely plays a character. He often plays himself.
And when you see him act, you kind of see why. His inability to act plays really well.
Yes, okay. I loved it.
So we have Captain Over, mm-hmm. and we have Roger. So there's a lot of issues whenever Over or Roger is used throughout the movie. So the plane takes off and we have several gags. Eventually, all the people on the plane who ordered fish start to get really violently ill, including the flight crew. Elaine, the flight attendant, has to find a doctor, and she finds Leslie Nielsen, who basically steals the movie whenever he's on screen. He can't help. Like, there's nothing he can do to save these people in the air, so they've got to get to the major city and land. With no one else to fly the plane except for a constantly deflating autopilot, Stryker has to face his fears. He's helped flying and to get on the ground with an air traffic controller that's played incredibly well by Lloyd Bridges. And also, pretty quickly after that, a veteran from the military, Robert Stack.
The darling of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, so he's helped.
R.I.P.
So he also comes in and helps get him through this. And we find out that Robert Stack is actually an old frenemy of Stryker. So there's always this kind of, I guess this is who we've got, but I think this is going to be a disaster. However, Stryker is able to pull himself together, makes a really complicated, horrible landing, which rips off the landing gear, but it impresses Dickinson. So she races back into his arms and they kiss, and they're going to obviously rekindle the relationship. Mm-hmm.
Well, she saved everyone.
Yeah, he totally is a hero.
She saved everyone. Sorry, not she.
I mean, he ripped off all the wheels, but yeah, whatever, you know. And at the end, the autopilot reinflates himself and somehow inflates a female companion, winks at the camera, and takes off. And we're not sure how it takes off because there are no wheels.
Willing suspension of disbelief. That's Boom. How it takes off. Wow, that was like 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's probably the most succinct
and we're
summary
done.
We'll ever have. Yeah. So in general, the main cast is phenomenal. One of the great things about Airplane is it showed people how to really make a spoof movie. This was a whole genre of the airport thriller. So like the slow pacing you were mentioning, the people were along for, who were watching it the first time, mm-hmm. had seen those movies. Right. So they kind of knew the beats.
So they were aping the emotion and tension and the pacing.
The birth of this movie came when the writers/directors were with this Kentucky Fried Theater Company in LA. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they do for their improv show, they would just tape late night TV mm-hmm. so they can figure out skits to do for mm-hmm. their shows. One of those movies was called Zero Hour, mm-hmm. and it's an airport thriller. There are monstrous similarities.
It's the like, same movie?
You can go on YouTube, yeah. And there are several parts which are just flat out lifted from Zero Hour. It was mm-hmm. so much. Mm-hmm. Their lawyers claim that, yes, technically this is parody, but buy the rights anyway. Several of the lines, the airplane crashing into an airport, uh-huh. and you know, it is kind of an amalgamation of that. But what's interesting about Airplane is that the jokes do, I feel like, do last the test of time. Even if you don't know the source material, you know, the setups are so clear, and the acting is so good that the inherent ridiculousness of it just comes through.
Yeah, they did on purpose hire actors that were not comedians, and they did on purpose treat it like a real serious, you know, script, and they weren't winking or elbowing us.
Oh, yeah.
That whole thing, you know, if they were winking at us and elbowing us and being like, hey, this is funny, right? Like, it wouldn't have been funny.
But yeah.
Because they are taking it so seriously and they're living out their reality mm-hmm. in a serious way, you know, it's all the more hilarious.
So the four main actors who were, like, serious, if I remember right, they're Robert Stack, Peter Graves, Lloyd Bridges, mm-hmm. Leslie Nielsen, which again, to anybody of our generation is like, oh, he's the comedy guy, but right. not at this
he
point.
He wasn't.
Leslie Nielsen had been begging and trying to get into comedy for years.
Aww.
And so this was his shot. So he was all in like immediately.
Yes.
And he steals the movie. Both Lloyd Bridges, from what I remember, and Peter Graves hated it. They didn't understand.
Which is hilarious because Lloyd Bridges, he's in Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part 2. And yeah, like,
this is his first movie with them. What happened was, I think it was Robert Stack who kind of brokered it between the other two. They were like, I don't get it. It's just not funny. He's told both of them, just be you.
Yeah.
Just play it straight. That's another reason why the Jaws gag mm-hmm. is crucial, because you know immediately, this is a comedy. We know this is ridiculous. And so that allows them mm-hmm. to play it straight. Mm-hmm. So there are silly things in the background mm-hmm. that it just enhances the joke.
It gives depth.
Yeah. People who are funny, I think, are just amazing. I wish I was a lot funnier. And it's just like...
You're funny.
Thank you. I try, which is sometimes the problem. When I was watching this, I was like, why does this work? You know, because these guys for decades made money making these movies acting like this, but everyone bought it. So I think it's the outside gags, which they sometimes, but not often, are directly a part of, that really lets you know, okay, this is funny. There are some other people who just, they're on stage and like, hey, I'm funny. You can't think you're funny. Some of my friends who are improvisers absolutely love that actor. But in this one, he just didn't do it for me. I could see him on stage.
Well, he was doing the opposite of what everybody else was doing.
Exactly.
I was like, wow, he is really the top.
He's one of the Kentucky Fried actors.
Oh, okay.
And so he, like...
So he's on stage.
Some of his non sequiturs are like straight out of his show, and he just made them up.
And shoehorned them in?
Yeah. Mm. I would imagine on stage in an improv... shows he's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, in this movie, I was like, just.
But in this movie, it was like, ooh, a little too much dessert.
I was just like, dude, just stop it.
Calm down.
Put on chucks and suspenders and just, you know, wear
go lean on something.
Go lean awkwardly on an imaginary wall.
This is a very dangerous conversation.
Well, anyway. Well, the other funny thing that I didn't realize, which you'll probably enjoy, is that Joe Zuzu, David Leisure, knew Robert Hayes, who's the star of the film. They were friends at Grossmont College in the acting program.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were roommates in San Diego State in the acting program.
Oh, my gosh.
So the part that David Leisure plays.
He was like Joey Zuzu.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of funny Zuzu commercials.
Yeah.
The car.
Like you could trust him or something like that. And you obviously could not trust
him. Could not whatsoever. Trust him.
He plays the Hare Krishna stereotype.
He has like five lines.
There are some problematic stereotypes in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are two African-American characters who speak jive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and they and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are the only African-Americans that I remember seeing.
Yeah.
So again, that's really problematic when the only time you see them is as a stereotype. I do like that those actors came up with their dialogue.
They just said, do some jive?
No, they had a script. The writers with their hat in their hand said, we get it. We've written this. Change it however you want.
Uh-huh.
We realize it's not accurate. So whatever you guys want to do. So yeah, it is a little slow in parts, but not. I didn't feel too bad. And I think part of it is just the beats of that type of movie, which we just don't have anymore.
Right. And they are so slow.
It was just they literally borrowed the plot structure from the movie and many of the lines from Zero Hour. What were some of your favorite gags in it?
I enjoyed at the beginning when the loudspeaker voices were arguing over what the white and red zones were for. And then we learned that they're actually in a relationship and that's why they're fighting.
One of the writers claims that the two voices that were doing that were the ones who actually did it at LAX.
Uh-huh.
And they were actually married in real life.
So it let's have a couple's spat over the loudspeaker.
Oh, my gosh. And it's so funny because, again, they play it straight.
And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is obviously reading off of cue cards.
Yeah.
I don't care.
He's memorized it word for word.
He's like, oh, my God, I'm the co-pilot.
Peter Graves, with this kid who comes up to the pilot, he just asks all of these innuendo questions.
Inappropriate.
Peter didn't want to do those lines at first.
No.
And the writers, they said we were going to explain it off in a scene you're not in. So he did it, and so they just lied to him. But what he did was that he... The boy who played the part, he was like, I was a little confused because I didn't understand the innuendos.
Right. And no, they didn't talk to him.
But I was also, he said he was also confused on how Peter was just so standoffish with them.
Oh.
And so what Peter was doing was he realized it could be trouble for him.
Yeah.
And so for years afterwards, he was just super careful anytime he was around a little kid.
Oh, that poor guy.
Yeah. So, which is kind of sad to think about that you would have to, monitor yourself so much. But he knew how it could be taken. So he was giving no excuse. Before he died, they had one of these conferences like Paley Fest or something like that, where a bunch of actors
get together.
Yeah. So you like screen the movie or you just like talk about a project. Peter Graves was sitting next to the kid. And at this point, the kid's like 40.
Yeah.
And someone asked about the scene. Evidently, for the rest of the panel, he was jokingly doing inappropriate things that just grew and grew and grew through the panel.
Peter Graves was?
Peter Graves did. Because it was just ridiculousness.
He got the last laugh.
Yeah, he did.
I loved when Lloyd Bridges was ordering everybody around very succinctly. Uh-huh. And then he orders Siamese twins to do two opposite things. And then they're both trying to go opposite directions.
Oh, my gosh. Lloyd Bridges is so hilarious, which is so funny that he didn't get it at first.
Yeah, because he's hilarious.
And it gets more comedic as you go. Mm-hmm. But it's like...
Oh, and the running gag
when
of like...
he keeps, I picked the wrong day to...
Quit smoking.
Doing aspirin. And I think he ends up with like LSD or something like that towards the end or something like that.
Amphetamines. Did he sniff glue? Or,
yeah.
Or
oh, yeah. Sniffs glue at one point.
He sniffs glue. He's like, oh, I picked the wrong day to stop doing amphetamines. And he like...
Yeah. So funny.
He's like tripping hardcore.
Yeah, there's tons of funny jokes. And it's one of those movies, too, where I don't think you can... catch all the gags first time.
You have to watch it a bunch of times.
Like there's a press conference scene. There's like 15 reporters holding mics, and there's an ice cream cone in the middle of it. Someone's holding up an ice cream cone.
Then they go, okay, folks, let's get some pictures. And then they go take all the pictures off the wall.
It is like the king of dad jokes. Like this movie.
It's like, it's sight gags. It's wordplay. It's dad jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it's so stupid, but the whole like jokes while they're Captain Over and yeah. Roger,
yeah,
they just keep doing it, so it's funny because there's like Captain Over, huh, Roger, huh,
yeah,
Over, huh.
It should not be that funny.
It's so
and it
stupid.
Is and like the other one is, we have to go to a hospital, what is it? He's like, oh, well, that's a building full of sick people, but
that's not important,
but
right,
that's
now.
Not important right now. That's a dad joke I want to claim. I need to figure out how to add that to my repertoire.
You should do that with your students. I'm sure they'd appreciate it.
Oh my gosh. I would. So that's part of teaching, is you got to keep yourself in.
Yeah, you got to keep yourself amused.
One of the interesting things about this is when you read about who was supposed to be in the movie, like Vincent Price.
Oh my gosh.
I think had the chance to be the doctor character. He turned it down because he didn't get it at first. There was one or two other legendary actors who, like Vincent Price, was like,
oh man,
the regret of my acting career is that I didn't accept that role.
Oh.
There was like two or three legends, but Vincent Price was the one who jumped
Leslie
up to me.
Nielsen got to do finally.
Leslie was amazing at
it. And then he got to do the Naked Gun movies,
which I thought were spectacular. So I haven't watched them in a long time, but yeah, it was a lot of
I mean, O.J. Simpson's in them, but...
Yeah, that's all right.
That's where I knew O.J. Simpson from, actually. I didn't really know him from his sports career.
It's also interesting that Sigourney Weaver read for Elaine Dickinson for The Flight Attendant.
Oh, wow.
And who I think she would have been able to... I think Julie Haggerty was brilliant.
Oh, she was perfect.
And she was perfect in it. I could see Sigourney Weaver also pulling that role off.
Hmm. She just doesn't strike me as a vulnerable, like, Julie brought a vulnerable, like, mousy, shrinking violet quality to it.
Yeah, she's not mousy, but I still think she could have done it. Hmm. I still think she would have done a good job with it. But it would have been against type of what she, you know, became, so.
Yeah. Well, my favorite is... That's hard to pick.
Yeah, I was about
it's
to say,
a tie.
I was like, where are you going to go?
I don't even know, because I was going to say Robert Stack,
oh,
but
yeah.
Also Lloyd Bridges, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And Leslie Nielsen. I mean, like I said, the core actors in this movie are just like, they are so good.
It's a nine-way tie.
So yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with this movie?
I do love this movie. It's a classic movie from my childhood. But I think because of the generation that I am, and that Top Gun was like, you know, it was filmed 10 miles away from my house. And it was a really big deal when it came out. So I think Hot Shots is probably a little more representative of my generation. So Airplane has a special place in my heart, but I think I might like Hot Shots a little more.
And it's funny, because about the age you saw Hot Shots is the age I saw Naked Gun. And so Naked Gun to me has that place. So I would say my rating for this movie is obviously 2 thumbs up. Like,
really?
It is such a good, like, I thought this was going to be Kentucky Fried Movie. With Airplanes.
Yeah, you put me off for a
long
time.
And I was like, oh man. And so I just didn't want to see it. But like I said, the comedy is they don't bat 1,000, but the comedy is so good.
Got a good average.
This is the one and only movie that the DGA, the Directors Guild, has allowed 3 people to be the director of a movie. So one of them was the one that was constantly at the camera. The other 2 were in a trailer right off set. Uh-huh. And so they had to play this charade.
That one
where
was directing?
They would have a take.
It was like Cyrano.
He would go in the trailer. They would talk. He would come out of the trailer and he would give notes.
Oh my
I don't know at what point they just said, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, did that make the process even longer?
You would think so. But yeah, that was Airplane.
I'm the co-pilot.
I cannot wait for this.
So you don't have any clue how I'm feeling?
Well, I don't know, because I know that in your heart of hearts, you want it to be double thumbs down. And yet when we were watching the movie, you did laugh several times at it. So I don't know where this is going to go.
What about you, Keith? How did this movie hold up for you?
There are a couple really gross and really homophobic and bad stereotypes are in this movie. Outside of that, if you put this movie and Van Wilder together, that's me at like 20.
Yeesh.
For my comedic taste.
That's a good thing I met
taste.
You when I was 30.
There you go. So it reminds me of when I was in a fraternity and stuff like that. So the just like you never know what's going to happen and you're always 5 seconds away from someone saying or doing something hilarious. So double thumbs up. Woo!
All right. So my pitch for this movie is two best friend losers mm-hmm. invent a Franken game mm-hmm. that takes off and becomes a professional sport. Tensions run high when their billionaire owner dies and wills the team to them, but with certain restrictions. I don't know if he was a billionaire. He looked like a Texas oil tycoon.
Yeah, I mean, very just stereotype. There are so many stereotypes in this movie. It's just insane. What I found really interesting about this in my research for this is basketball was an actual game.
Yeah, the Zucker brothers made it up.
And several of the other players in the movie are actually their friends who used to play it with them. Huh. Explains the athleticism of the people playing. So.
Yeah. So we have Coop, who's played by Trey Parker, and we have Reamer, who's played by Matt Stone.
Mm-hmm.
They're best friends, and it's many, many years after high school, and they crash this party with fancy people, and they're carrying around like a 6-pack of beer. And,
oh, no, a 30-pack.
Oh, is it a 30-pack?
Yeah.
you know, didn't take a shower for the occasion, probably. Just, you know, walking around and just being terrible people at this party that they were not invited to. And so they're kind of pouting, so they go out back to the basketball hoop.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of start shooting hoops, and they still have the 30-pack of beer in their arms as they're shooting hoops. And so then some guys come out that were probably the jocks in high school mm-hmm. and challenge them to a game. And they're like, okay, we'll play you, but we're going to play this game that we learned in the hood. And they're like, yeah. And these are the rules. And they're like making the rules up as they go. It kind of reminded me of 8-year-olds playing together.
Because everyone at the party is like super preppy, except for them.
They're slobs.
Yeah. And then these guys are like, can slam and can do all this stuff that there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to get destroyed.
So then they make the rules up as they go, like 8-year-olds do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, oh no, you have to shoot from here. And oh, I can psych you out while you're trying to shoot. That's the hood rules. And so they win the game. So they take this on into their actual lives and they get excited about creating this new game that I guess combines baseball and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Coop makes a basketball out of his leather Lazy Boy chair and mm-hmm. they call that ball Lazy Boy. And they even include a guy named Squeak, who they torture the entire time. The sport becomes very popular in the neighborhood, probably kind of like cornhole. Did you guys have cornhole back when you were in
No, we had fraternity? We had a version of beer pong that wasn't like the one that became super popular. You had to play ping pong with a cup of beer, and we had all sorts of rules to it.
Well, I played beer pong in a house that was very much like Reamer and Coop's house, mm-hmm. where the cat box was under the table we were using for the beer pong. And so the ball would drag cat litter into the cups.
I mean, my fraternity house got condemned, but even we didn't have kitty litter
in our beer pong.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Shout out.
College.
To college. That was the house where the cops showed up because one of my friends was building a fire pit without the pit. And they were like, and he was like, no, it's okay. I Googled it.
Did he get arrested for that?
No. They just told him to stop. Anyway, so it becomes super popular. The whole neighborhood's involved. Mm-hmm. And so at one of their championship games, there's this rich businessman named Denslow, who's played by Ernest Borgnine. And he wants to make basketball a professional sport. He and Coop both agree that the rules should prevent players from being traded, teams from moving cities, and no corporate sponsorships. Everyone's going to make the same amount of money, which is not much.
That's one of the things that I think a lot of people overlook on this movie, is it's such a good critique of the modern sport franchises on how sports had become increasingly commercial. That commentary is spot on. A lot of income disparity and stuff like that. So in that way, this is a very smart movie and does a good job spoofing it.
So 5 years later, we see that Coop and Reamer and Squeaks are on this team called the Bears. Mm-hmm. And this is an established sport, and it's got lots of teams and stadiums all set up, a facade of a garage door with a hoop mm-hmm. over it. And so we're at the championship game. It's called the Denslow Cup.
Every team is a bad stereotype of their city. Like, even the Heroes are the Milwaukee Bears.
And as Coop is about to shoot the winning goal unit basket.
Wow.
Denslow, the rich businessman who owns the team, starts choking on a hot dog. And so Coop runs over to try to give him CPR, and Denslow dies, and he misses his basket goal unit. So they lose the game. After the game, we're outside, and we meet Jenna, who's played by Yasmin Bleeth, mm-hmm. who showed up in South Park a few times.
Hello, Yasmin.
She's the head of this Dream Come True Foundation, which I guess is just like Make-A-Wish Foundation. Mm-hmm. So she's got all these kids that are dying mm-hmm. with her in tow. They are still very interested in Coop's autograph. And Reamer butts in and he tries to flirt with Jenna too. And he thinks he's getting somewhere, but he absolutely isn't, just clueless. And so at the reading of the will of Denslow, Coop learns that he is the new team owner of the Bears. On the condition that the team wins the Denslow Cup this next year, or else the ownership is going to go to Denslow's widow, who was his wife of like a few months, Yvette, played by Jenny McCarthy. Unfortunately, Jenny McCarthy is just there for sex jokes, which was disappointing to me. So there's another team owner named Baxter Kane, played by Robert Vaughn, and he's the owner of the Felons, and he wants to change the rules of basketball so that they can make a little money.
He basically wants to turn it into everything that's evil about sports.
Mm-hmm. And so when Denslow was alive, that was impossible, but now that Denslow's dead, he feels like he has a better chance to do that. So he tries to pressure Coop to go along with all the other teams so that they can make money, but Coop's not budging. And at that will reading, Kane and Yvette decide that they're going to team up to sabotage Coop because Yvette wants the ownership of the team. And, of course, Kane wants to make money off the sport.
Well, he wants to make huge, monstrous profits off the sport.
So he wants to exploit the sport.
Exactly.
So in the meantime, Coop and Jenna spend some time together. And to kind of get on her good side, he tries to make a wish happen for one of her children who need a liver transplant. And so he gets to spend the day.
With the Bears.
With the Bears. And at one point, they are in a bar, you know, just doing shots.
Yeah, with the kid. Not that we in any way approve of this, but yes, they're doing tequila shots. So,
and the kid's like
salt
holding
shoot,
it.
Lime, yeah.
And he's got salt all over his cheeks.
And he needs a liver transplant.
That night. He's getting one that night.
Yes.
And so then Reamer then gets Coop to, tricks Coop into promising 3 home runs for this kid. They play that game and he makes 2 home runs. And mm-hmm. so then there's this ridiculously stupid, like, hospital scene where they show up and they're sitting on his air tube or something. And so he's like, he's flatlining. And so then, you know, Coop has to grab the paddles and give him 15,000 volts or whatever. And it's just like so stupid. So Kane realizes he's not getting anywhere with Coop. So he meets with Reamer. I did enjoy Kane's just reactions to Reamer because Reamer's so stupid and just doesn't understand. And so he like literally has like a migraine.
He's like, what? No. What? Ah. And just has to leave like conversations.
Which is how I feel. I wish I could have left. So. So he meets with Reamer. He reveals that he had offered Coop a chance for the team to get rich, but that Coop had turned it down and didn't talk to any of them. Mm-hmm. And so this upsets Reamer and the whole team. And so to make everybody happy, Coop makes each team member a part owner mm-hmm. to kind of placate them.
But Reamer is equal. So he makes Reimers equal, and everyone else gets at least a little part of the team.
Which is a bad choice.
Horrible choice.
So then Kane cuts funding to Jenna's program to try to force Coop and Reimer to bend to his will. So he gets Reimer to sign off on a clothing line, which wasn't too hard to do. So Reimer becomes even more of an insufferable douche canoe, if that was possible. Yeah. Kane reveals that he's pulled a fast one on them and that their clothing line workforce is actually made up of child labor in Calcutta. And so he blackmails them into losing the Denslow Cup, or he's going to go public with the damning info. And Jenna, of course, sees these pictures too. And so she dumps Coop. So Coop and Reimer get into this big fight and they end their friendship. Coop flies to Calcutta, but nobody knows where he is. Enter Robert Stack and Unsolved Mysteries.
Yay!
Coop makes it back in time for the Denslow Cup, having replaced all of his child workers with adults, and gives them a very good benefits package. Mm-hmm. Coop and Reimer are still mad at each other, and at the halftime show for the Denslow Cup, because he does make it back for that, Squeaks just has had enough of their fighting and sniping, and he's reprimanding them and yelling at them. And all of a sudden, this microphone comes down next to his face while he's having this inspiring speech about to the whole stadium about reminding them why they started this game in the first place and what they would lose if they quit, and, you know, that their friendship and yada, yada, yada. So Coop and Reimer have a make-out session, mm-hmm. and then they win the game. And Jenna finds out via Unsolved Mysteries what Coop had done in India. And so she grabs all her children and races to the game in a car with Dale Earnhardt, which mm-hmm. was sad.
I'm glad he got to be in this movie, though.
And yeah.
And it was a funny bit. It was a funny bit that he got to do, which was nice.
Sad. So Jenna and Coop get back together, and Yvette realizes that she wants to have a change of heart. And so then she makes out with Reimer at the mm-hmm. very end of the movie, because everybody's going to make out with somebody. And then at the very end of the game, Coop gets to meet his hero, Reggie Jackson. That's basketball. I hated their friendship. And I hated how they treated Squeaks. They're just awful to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, I do like Trey Parker and Matt Stone when they are voiceover artists. I did not like them as actors. I didn't like them as characters. This was like the one time where they didn't write, produce, or direct a movie. It said that they made innumerable suggestions that were used in the movie, and I could tell.
Oh, it was clearly. Do you know who originally had signed on for the movie?
Who?
Chris Farley.
Oh, man.
Chris Farley was Coop. Yeah, so originally he was either signed or in the process of signing and then backed mm-hmm. out.
I didn't find them to be sympathetic characters, and I didn't see any redeeming qualities in either of them towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess Coop a little, but Reimer was just completely just mm-hmm. a stereotypical, like, archetype, like, douchebag. And the other thing is, you know, their acting style. Like, I found that it was kind of the opposite of what we talked about in Airplane, where everybody was authentically living their truth and, mm-hmm. like, not winking at the camera and elbowing. This was, and I think it was because it was these two, and typically they are voice actors. They were winking at the camera, and they were elbowing, and Trey Parker does this thing where I was, like when something's terrible. Just a lot of emoting and just false. And so I was disappointed because, you know, like I said, I like them, but in this project, I felt like it was one-dimensional.
I feel like you're having the reaction to these two characters in basketball,
mm-hmm.
like I had with the two main characters of Romeo and Michelle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like something about, yeah, just it's kind of like...
But they at least were nice to each other. Jeez.
Yeah.
They were kind of like Dumb and Dumber, but not as likable. Mm-hmm. And this movie was kind of like The Ringer. And The Ringer is a really problematic movie. But at least Johnny Knoxville is likable.
Oh, boy. Yeah, like I couldn't stand The Ringer. So,
well, then this is my Ringer.
This is, and you're okay. I can kind of see that.
They had this penis joke where, like, they're standing in the locker room. Mm-hmm. And they obviously have hoses for penises. And it's just like, okay, like... You could tell they were like, oh, what if we had really long penises? Like, I know that's what was happening. Like, I could just, every choice that was made that annoyed me, I was like, yeah, I know. They were like, oh, what if we?
Yeah. What was an interesting way for Yasmin Bleeth to start the movie was to have that be the first scene she's got to film. So.
And when they played the San Francisco team, like, mm-hmm. I was like, what year was this? Yikes. It was just like so homophobic and just okay. It's a frat boy movie.
Yeah, everything was culturally appropriate or
yeah.
You know.
I liked seeing Real Big Fish. I was a fan of Real Big Fish back in the day. I liked the Salute to Unsolved Mysteries,
mm-hmm.
but I was a little disappointed because I don't like my Robert Stack with such a foul mouth for no reason. So I was like,
yeah, it was for comedy, but yeah. Yeah, I thought he did a better job with that comedy than Bob Costa and Al Michaels. It was just like they were really kind of winking at the camera the whole time. And
oh,
it was just
yeah.
like, well, Robert Stack was playing it straight.
Well, he's a professional. And
he's
worked with these guys before.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets it.
Exactly.
And it was funny to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in a glass case.
Yeah, it was funny.
Because he's been collected. I get what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny to see the couple of direct airplane connections. Mm-hmm.
Overall, I was disappointed. I recognize this as a spoof of like a sports team film. Like I've seen Major League and
mm-hmm.
I recognize it as a sports spoof. It just, and I don't know if it's because of who they used. I don't know if two other actors, it would have been a different story. I think maybe. Because we don't have all of the baggage from what Matt Stone and Trey Parker do, try to come over. It just really didn't work for me.
It's one of those questions where it's like you asked who was Reamer. It's like, well, it would have been David Spade. It would have been interesting to see this movie.
Oh my God.
With Chris Farley and David
Spade. That would have been great.
And see what would have happened.
Yeah,
with
no penis hoses.
Yeah, that's true. Probably wouldn't have had that. So, yeah, I mean, that would have been, at that point of time, it would have been like.
That would have been awesome.
Or, oh, I know what it would have been. It would have been, if it would
Adam
have been
Sandler?
Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, that's another like kind of door in the past that would have been interesting to see how they would have taken the same,
yeah.
similar ideas.
I guess it just, because when I think of them, I'm realizing, I think it just lacked heart. This was like a douche-cadoo frat boy movie. We went on a trip one time and there was this group of like frat guys that were like in the same hotel as us. And I called them the douche canoes.
They were basically Parker and Stone here mixed with the Butabi brothers. And they were at the wrong resort to be like that.
Yep.
Like someone oops
were,
the travel.
They were at the Stella Got Her Groove Back resort.
Yeah. And they're on the prowl.
That's what this movie is for.
It is totally a gross out movie. I mean, that's the purpose of it.
But
that
since
type.
It's a Zucker Brothers movie, a la Naked Gun Airplane,
mm-hmm.
I'm disappointed by that,
mm.
what it turned into. I think I had a higher bar.
I clearly like the movie better than you did. I think it all rests on Coop, that if you like the Coop character,
I then, liked him better than Reamer.
Yeah So like if you like that Coop character, then you would probably like this movie. If you can't stand the Coop character, then yeah, this is a really rough. It's like okay, this is
a rough 5 hours.
This is gonna. It's not 5 hours. So yeah, it would be a rough movie to watch if you don't like. So that's kind of the yeah. So you can go like 10 minutes in. Do I like Coop? Do I not like Coop? Okay, I kind of know what I need to do with this movie.
I really wanted to like it, and I mm-hmm. wish I liked it, but I just hated it.
Well, you did laugh at parts, but, you know, I understand, like, just because you laugh at something doesn't mean you're like, oh, that's great. So
yeah,
I,
there was, like, one or two things that were funny. I can't remember what they were. Do you remember what they were? It was something ridiculous, like someone getting hit
in
the face or something.
Oh, so many.
Know.
Yeah. It's interesting we came at it from two different angles when we basically first watched it. Like, I went in going like, oh, that's going to be the stupidest movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched and I was like, oh, that was so much better than I thought. You know, you walked in with like, well,
Criterion
no, this needs to be, yeah, this needs to be Airplane. And it's definitely not Airplane. But, like, to me, it's so much better than, like, that ping pong movie, Balls of Fury. Like,
oh, that movie was awful.
There are so many movies that are worse than this one. Like, I think it's...
But, again, even that one, I feel like, had a little more heart than this one.
Well, see, I think it goes down to the main character. Because Balls of Fury, I could never watch again. Like, it is so
I
bad.
Would rather watch Balls of Fury.
And, like, I... But I didn't
Go
like...
Go get it.
I didn't like... the, we do not own that movie. But I did not like the main character from the get, and I could not get into it. So, because we were talking about it when we were watching it, and I remember you liked it better than I did. And I was like, dude, this guy is just trying to be Jack Black. You know, it's like be your own self. Like
yeah.
I'm sure that guy's hilarious. It just felt like a movie that was made for Jack Black.
But they couldn't
and
get
they
Jack
couldn't
Black.
Get him. Mm-hmm. And they were like,
no, I agree.
Crap. So we're going to get as close to Jack Black as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess I had in my mind what I thought your thing
Let's
was going to be.
Let's do that. What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say that because of Zucker, even though it's not your cup of tea, Trey Parker and Matthew Stone kind of epitomized that late 90s gross out humor. That you were, I was totally wrong, but I thought you were going to give that a thumbs up for that, but a total thumbs down on, like, that is not my movie.
I'm really sorry. I just have to give it 2 thumbs down because, like, even while we were watching it, like, it was giving me a headache.
Aww.
And it seemed kind of long. I was just really disappointed in the Zucker brothers.
Yeah. I think the other thing that clearly resonates with me a lot more in this movie that you could care less about, which is totally fine, is the whole commentary on sports. That was when I was starting to go, wait a second, why is this such a big deal? And mm-hmm. you look at these people who are making so much more money and they're like, yeah. Oh yeah, the players are making money. It's like, yeah, the players are making some money, but they're losing it like immediately. And they're,
yeah. Well, and all that stuff went over my head.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I almost asked you to explain it to me. And then I was like, I don't want to know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for watching the movie again.
You're
and I,
welcome.
And I understand more now why you don't like it so much. So
well, now
I'm sorry
I understand.
To...
Well, and the thing was, is the first time I watched it, I didn't think it was super funny. But then this time, knowing what I know about how it was made and who made it,
mm-hmm.
I think it just made me angry.
Aww.
So I'm sorry. I tried.
It's all right.
I really wanted to, but you know, this movie was not meant for me whatsoever on any level.
So. All right, that's fair. Your sister goes out with Squeak.
This movie goes out with Squeak.
Wow. All right, so has the palate been cleansed?
From Logan?
Yes, from Logan.
My heart will never go on after that.
Aww.
No, it will. It's just, ugh.
That was a good movie.
It was a really good movie, and I'm still.
And so we picked the two dumbest movies we could think of to try to...
To scrub it out.
Scrub it out, so. So yeah, and I liked Airplane, so thank you for...
Oh, you're welcome. I know that there was a couple of gags that made me laugh. Like the free-range chicken night
mm-hmm.
was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was another... Someone got hit. Like stupid slapstick stuff I think I laughed about.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where it's like, it's going to make you laugh. It's just whether you're going to be willing to admit to other people that you laughed at it. So,
I'll admit, I there was probably 2.5 times that I laughed.
Okay. So what are we watching next week, Corey?
Oh, are you backpedaling out of the stadium?
No, just trying to stay married, so...
You get to watch a movie that I think I suggest almost every week. There's like two or three
you pretty
movies.
Much do.
This is a childhood favorite. I'm starting to realize that I really love coming of age movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if they're girls or boys.
Okay.
So we get to watch The Goonies.
I've tried like 3 times to watch the movie. And every time I'm just like, eh, which is weird because you would think it would be right up my alley, but I just...
Well, if I'm remembering correctly, I haven't seen it in a very long time. The beginning of the movie, when I was younger, I remember going, what is this? Because the beginning of the movie is not what you expect.
Yeah.
So you have to hang in there.
All right. Well, I'll get to hang in there. And I don't know what you'll think of the movie that I picked as opposite. So we're trying to think of like a... Like a bunch of kids going up against impossible odds. And mm-hmm. so I picked Toy Soldiers, which is one of those movies which I...
Which Mr. Sean Astin is in both.
That is true.
So it worked out.
That was the connection. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those movies that I know is bad, but for whatever reason, I just love it. I think it's because I was the age of the characters when
yeah,
it came out.
You
so
were
I think it was
age.
Like, yeah, and they'd have movies of kids kind of doing this every once in a while, but they were always so implausible. So this was... The first one I remember where it was like, oh, I could actually see teenagers kind of pulling this off, mm-hmm. what they do. So,
have you seen Lord of the Flies with Baltazar Getty?
No, I haven't. So,
I think the only reason I liked that was because of Baltazar Getty.
I would imagine so. So, I have.
So I won't make you watch it.
It's really, it's so interesting. You're totally going to cut this, but it's it's so funny that. When it comes to Lord of the Flies, that's like the go-to of like, oh, we need to have rules and we need to do this stuff because left on its own devices.
We don't need this to turn into Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, we don't want to turn this into Lord of the Flies. And it's a completely fictitious story. And the one time we have had kids who were marooned in an island,
mm-hmm.
they actually helped each other and they saved each other and got out. But, you know,
I know
I'm sure
story.
Probably has a lot to do with the kids themselves. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure. the wrong people are on the island, yeah, it would turn into that.
Yeah, if Coop and Reamer were stuck on an island.
I think Coop would be fine. Reamer, I don't know.
I hope he drowns.
I don't know. So, anyway, thank you so much for listening to our podcast this week.
Yes, thank you. I was alerted by Facebook that they now have the ability to play our podcast directly on our Facebook page. So I signed us up.
Wow.
I don't know how it works. I don't know what it looks like yet, but I signed it up.
So yeah, so you'll be able to listen to us on Facebook if you'd like.
And you can also like directly look at the pictures of what we're talking about.
Exactly. You know, so there, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Spotify, so many different ways to hear us if you'd like. Wherever you find us, thank you for listening to us. And yes, if you could like or subscribe, review, some sort of combination of that, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Yes.
And definitely do check out the Facebook page.
I forgot to tell you. I'm glad that this is happening. I got an email from Apple.
Okay.
Our podcast is number 196.
Nice.
Probably out of 200.
Probably out of 197. Or maybe 196. But
I just wanted to tell you that.
Nice.
Yeah, we are humble bragging right now.
Oh, yeah. We are just, we're toy that meme of that guy who's like celebrating with the trophy and then it pans out and he's like number 36 or 196 and he's still partying.
And he's like showering champagne on himself.
Yeah, and everybody else who's above him is looking down like, what are you doing? So we appreciate you guys listening to us and we hope you have a great week, and we will talk at you next week with the Goonies and...
Toy Soldiers.
Oh, wow. That's going to be great.
Hey, you guys!